What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
The story you're about to hear on Love, Lust, Fear is true. Some names, places, and other identifying details may have changed to protect the storyteller. Love, Lust, Fear may contain graphic language and depictions of sensitive situations. Please listen with caution. Next on Love, Lust, Fear.
Who I was, which was a chubby Hispanic girl living a life in middle school when girls and boys were starting to pay more attention to each other, and I had crushes, but they were not reciprocated. We went with like a group of our friends from the movie theater, and he and I sat next to each other, and we started to hold hands under the armrest. We're holding hands now. At the time, I was just like, we're going to be together forever. We had talked about it. We had talked about the fact that, you know, you're the love of my life. I'm the love of your life. And when we broke up, as I was starting to let it go and move on and start doing my own thing, he texted me and was like, I miss you. We got back together, and then that same exact cycle. He breaks up with me. I'm devastated. I start to move on. He calls me. We get back together. He starts to pull away again. I'm sick to my stomach about it. I was healed. I was better. I was doing these things, but every time I found something new to pull me out of the hole, he came back. There really was no escaping it. I'm crying and sobbing, and I wake my parents up. I wake my mom up, and I tell her, I said, I feel like I'm going to die, and I will do anything to make this pain stop. I don't care what I have to do. I don't care if I have to hurt myself physically. The pain that I'm feeling right now at this loss, I want to not be here. I'm begging him, please just break it off with me. I can't do this anymore. I know that you're cheating on me. I know something's going on. I feel it. He was like, I know that we've been through a lot, but you have to learn to trust me.
As a teenager in the late 90s and early 2000s, Lauren struggled with body image issues and low self-esteem, and felt like she didn't measure up to the idealized images she saw on TV. Shows like Dawson's Creek and One Tree Hill became her escape, but she could never find a character who truly resembled her. On occasion at school, she became the victim of the cruel realities of mean girl culture, adding to her insecurities. However, things changed when she discovered her passion for high school theater, which gave her newfound confidence. Landing her first job at a local movie theater further boosted her social standing amongst her peers. Still, romance eluded her, until she met a fellow theater worker. What began as a sweet movie-like romance quickly became darker as the emotional highs were followed by intense lows. Over time, Lauren found herself trapped in a toxic on-again, off-again relationship, creating a cycle of pain that seemed impossible to escape. What she had once imagined as a fairy tale romance slowly morphed into an obsessive, destructive love that nearly took her life.
My parents are disgustingly in love with each other, very much in love with each other. My mom was the pretty skinny cheerleader type. And growing up, seeing pictures of her, that's who she was. And that wasn't me. My dad's a bigger guy. I look more like my dad. As much as my parents were a good relationship to look up to, I still looked at my mom and thought, well, you're what guys want. This, you know, thin, pretty girl. I'm not that, right? And so I think I struggled with that. I was born in 89, and I grew up in, you know, 90s and was really hitting puberty in the early 2000s. Kind of a rough time to be who I was, which was a chubby Hispanic girl. I looked to TV and never really saw myself. I wasn't seeing myself represented in a whole lot of friend groups. And when you're a young girl and you're watching these things, what you're really looking at a lot is the romantic relationships. And I myself was living a life in middle school when girls and boys were starting to pay more attention to each other. And I had crushes, but they were not reciprocated. And so because I didn't have that male attention, you know, that attention from guys. I found my footing a lot with joining theater and finding that world and finding something that I was just really good at. And I took to it. I was good at being on stage. I was good at performing. I got more confident in that way. And really, theater and acting taught me how to fake being confident in the real world when I was off stage, but still struggled with my confidence just in interacting with guys, really, you know, and in a romantic relationship type of way. The day that I turned 16 years old, I was ready to have a job. I wanted that independence. I wanted my own money. I literally applied to work at the movie theater. I got the job right away and immediately I loved it. Being surrounded by a bunch of people that are your age and you're getting to watch movies and you're getting to see things before they come out, and working at the movie theater felt like being in a coming of age movie. I would literally feel like this is like Fast Times at Ridgemont High. It just made you feel that way. And people would come up to me at school. Oh, I recognize you from the movie theater. And it's like this little claim to fame, I guess. It does feel like you're in the community and you've got friends and you know people and you're seeing these groups of people come in every weekend. And there was just something very fun, very cool about it. Probably around the time I was like 19 or 20, he started working there and he was a bit younger than me, 2 years younger than me. We had our separate group of friends. We went to different high schools, so we didn't have a lot of overlapping friends other than the friends that we were starting to make at the movie theater. I thought he was cute. Growing up, I very much had a type, and I loved someone who didn't take themselves too seriously because I want to just laugh and have a good time, and he was very much like that. Our humor was very, very similar. We liked the same things, and oh my God, you like How I Met Your Mother. Oh my God, you watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I love that show. When you're young, when you're 19 and 20, that's all there is. What else is there? I had people over for like a party, my parents' house, unbeknownst to them, in the basement of my parents' house. And yeah, everyone would be drinking and kind of hanging out. I'd been drinking a little bit. I knew that I thought he was cute. There were maybe a couple other people that at the movie theater that I thought were cute. And I remember like texting him or something saying like, first person to text me back gets a kiss. And he was the first person to text me back. That was like one of those things where I was like, I'm clearly attracted to him. I think he might be attracted to me. And the next time I saw him, it was just this joke of like, well, when do I get my kiss? Like kind of a thing, right? And so it kind of progressed that way. You know, he and I were both flirts in this world of working at the movie theater. It's like, again, you know, everyone's young and everyone is like hanging out with each other and drinking after work and having a good time and all this other stuff. So it's like, there is a lot of that, a lot of like, ooh, who do I want to date next? And who do I want to, you know, spend my time with? He was dating girls from his high school. He was dating other girls that he knew. And I was seeing casually other people, had crushes on people that worked at the movie theater. We went to go see Scott Pilgrim versus the World. We went with like a group of our friends from the movie theater, and he and I sat next to each other and we started to hold hands under the armrest. We're holding hands now. Somehow that feels more boyfriend, girlfriend than anything else that we could have done. There would be times where like if we'd go see a movie by ourselves and you sit all the way in the back and just naturally romantic, sitting in a dark theater, watching a movie, kissing in the back. There was just something immediately and effortlessly romantic about it. For somebody like me who felt like every time I watch a movie, I wish I was in it. It felt like I was in it for the first time. Like I'm in a movie and I'm getting to live my high school kind of dreams of sneaking a kiss with my secret boyfriend in the back of a movie theater. I mean, it's every rom-com that's ever been. And obviously because we got to work together, it's like you're getting paid to be in love, getting paid to be at the movie theater and have fun with each other and then drive around for hours after we got off work, just hanging out and talking and sharing music with each other. It just very much felt like, how much time can I spend with this person as possible? I had just turned 21 at the time, just short of a full year together. He broke up with me. I was kind of blindsided. This honeymoon stage, it felt like it lasted up until the point that at the time I was just like, we're going to be together forever. We had talked about it. We had talked about the fact that, you know, you're the love of my life. I'm the love of your life. And I think that when we broke up, the conversation was kind of like, I love you. You're the love of my life, but we're too young to have found that already. And I want to be able to go out in the world. I want to be able to do my own thing. And, you know, it was that kind of thing. And I was devastated. I mean, I'd never felt anything like it before. And even with that first really, like I said, more casual relationship I'd had in college as kind of like a showman's where I had said, oh, I don't need any more friends and just kind of walked away from it. I couldn't do that with this one. I wanted to hold on to it so badly. So the time after that breakup was really hard. I felt like I wanted to keep talking to him and I wanted to keep texting him and I wanted to hold on. And then as I was starting to let it go and move on and start doing my own thing, he texted me and was like, I miss you. And then very shortly after we met up and we talked and we got back together. And then that same exact cycle, he breaks up with me. I'm devastated. I start to move on. He calls me. We get back together. He starts to pull away again. I'm sick to my stomach about it. You know, TV shows of the time, you're watching The OC and you're watching these shows, even Friends, you know what I mean? Even like all of those shows where it's like, oh, people break up and get back together all the time. If you love each other, that's what you do, right? And so I think there was always a part of me that was like, maybe he'll come back. And I would try to kind of push past that. And a lot of it was trying to fake it again, like fake it till you make it and posting on social media like I was totally fine. And then when he came back, it was kind of like, okay, so tell me all the things I want to hear, which is I love you and I miss you so much. And I feel like I really screwed up and I hate the day to day without you. And I just wanted that so bad. You know, again, it was like, you get this attention and whether or not the attention is good or bad, it's the first time you're getting it. And so you're just going to take it. For me, again, continually just getting over the fact that like, oh, you used to be the chubby friend that no boys were paying attention to. You're not that person anymore, but that person still lives within you. It didn't matter what the attention was. It was just that I was getting it. And from somebody who I thought I could love forever. This is my movie. And this is the part in the movie where the guy comes back and he says he's sorry and he kisses you and he tells you he loves you and you get back together and then the credits roll. So let's go. Let's do this. You know, that was really the thought. The times that we broke up after that first time were almost worse. Partially it was because I knew then I was putting myself in this position to just be hurt over and over again. And what became really hard was our dynamic with our friends at the movie theater and with our families, because we'd met each other's parents. We'd done that whole thing. And once the first breakup happened, my family was done. And for sure, after the second one, they were so far, we're not doing this again. I was living at home at the time and I wasn't sleeping at all. Most of the time I couldn't sleep in my bed because for whatever reason, I associated being in my room with being with him. And so I would sleep downstairs on the couch and I couldn't really eat. Like I wasn't eating, I wasn't sleeping. And I just remember there was one night where in the middle of the night, I went into my parents' room and I'm crying and sobbing and I wake my parents up. I wake my mom up and I tell her, I said, I feel like I'm going to die. And I will do anything to make this pain stop. I don't care what I have to do. I don't care if I have to hurt myself physically. The pain that I'm feeling right now at this loss, I want to not be here. And I was like, I need to go to the hospital. I feel sick. I felt like physical pain. I'd never experienced anything like it. Like when people say you could die of a broken heart, that's the thing that I think about is like that pain of like this person that you love more than anything doesn't want to speak to you anymore, doesn't want to be with you anymore. They want to be with other people. And she took me to the emergency room. And I mean, I didn't know what to tell them necessarily when I got there because it was, again, very much like I don't know. I feel like I'm dying. I feel like I want to hurt myself. I feel all of these things. I don't, can I have medication? What can you give me to just not feel this anymore? The recovery was really, really small, stupid things. The only thing that I used to be able to do to get myself to stop thinking about it and focus on something else was escape room games. There were like escape room games and apps that you could play on your phone where it was like you had to find clues within the room to get into the next room or whatever. Just like escape rooms in real life, but on your phone. And I discovered one day and I downloaded it and I played it for hours, like nonstop. It was literally the only thing that I could do that would get my brain to stop thinking about him and what he was doing and who he was with and all of that. I had left the movie theater and I started waiting tables. He had gotten another job too. So it's not like we were working at the movie theater anymore. We were kind of on our own paths. I was healed. I was better. I was doing these things. But every time I found something new to pull me out of the hole, he came back. There really was no escaping it. Hours and hours that my friends would spend with me telling me, you know, why are you wasting your time? And if he's not going to realize how great you are, you know, all the stuff that your friends and your family say to you, it was getting attention from other guys and realizing there was something else out there and really trying to kind of hone in on that and get back to essentially faking it, because that's what it did feel like I was doing most of the time. You know, I won't call him, but just know that I want to. I won't text him, but God knows I want to. I always had, throughout some of the breakups, like had this feeling that he was getting back together with exes or kind of seeing other girls here and there. And again, social media was really on the come up during all these years. And so I would block him or I would try not to look at things, but then I would end up caving and looking at it. And I would see when he, you know, oh, he's out with friends. A lot of the time that I spent with my friends back then was just driving around. Nobody had their own home. Nobody had their own place to live. Everyone was living at home. It was the easiest thing in the world to just drive by his house and see that so-and-so's car was there with him. And those were the things that A, would drag me back into feeling like absolute crap, and B, would make me feel like, who am I? I'm not this person. I am not this girl that drives past people's houses. We got back together after all of these things. He had just gotten an apartment, but I was still living at home with my parents. And so I was spending a lot of time at his apartment. We were like in bed together, just like napping or something. And he got a text on his phone and I just so happened to like look at it. And I could see that it was like a flirty text, but the name said it was from a guy. And I was like, well, what is this? Like, what's going on, right? I think I ended up like grabbing his phone and going into the bathroom and like closing the door and locking it. And of course he was furious and like slamming on the door and hitting the wall and all of this other stuff. And I was just looking at these texts and I was like, oh my God, who I know who this is. This is one of your ex-girlfriends who I do not like and does not like me. And we've had this discussion and we would have these fights about who, you know, who are you talking to and what is going on and blah, 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 blah. And he would always just kind of convince me, well, like, this is why I wanted to break up at first. And maybe we need to spend some time apart and we don't have to break up per se, but we won't be together all the time. Again, kind of pushing me away, but in a way that was still like, but stay right there just in case I need you. And for whatever reason, I was trying to convince myself that I was fine with that, even though I wasn't. There would be days where I would be with him and then out of nowhere, I would just start crying and I would just be upset. And he would ask me what was going on and I couldn't tell him and I couldn't express it. But of course, as time went on and I got a little bit more in touch with what the heck was going on with my own emotions, I realized it was because I know you're cheating and I know you're doing these things and I know that you don't want to be with me and I know that I'm severely unhappy and I know that you're severely unhappy and we're just pretending like everything's fine. And I felt that all the time. I felt sick to my stomach all the time during that relationship, all the time. I really did just find myself starting to pick fights a little bit. I know that I just needed the person that I was in a relationship with to tell me, I love you. There's no one else. There's no one else I want to be with. I'm happy with you. And so I would pick fights. Who are you talking to? And what is going on? And why don't you want to hang out with me? And why are you not responding to my texts? And again, I was somebody that I didn't want to be. And I'm sure in that respect, he would then turn into someone that he did not necessarily want to be. We would argue. And I think that he would let that get the best of him. And there was one time that he punched a hole in one of his walls because we were fighting and he wanted me to leave and I wouldn't leave. And when I would bring that up to my friends, one of my friends in particular was a girl that we had both been friends with from the movie theater. And she was kind of like, well, that's not okay. Like, you know, that's not okay, right? And I was kind of like, well, yeah, but I was egging him on. I was pushing the fight. He wanted me to leave his apartment. I wouldn't leave. That's on me, kind of a thing. We were together all the time, even when we didn't really want to be. We were constantly pushing each other's buttons. He wanted space. I didn't want to give him that space. The more he pulled away, the more I held on. And that was at his expense. That was at my expense. That was at our friends' expenses. Like, it didn't matter to me. I just wanted to hang on to him. Just about 5 years on, we were back together, but things weren't really great. At that point, I was still waiting tables. He had actually started working back at the movie theater. He got a job back there. They had just opened a bar at the movie theater, so he started working as a bartender there. And he also had a second job as a driver for Jimmy John's. And he had brought up to me a couple of times this girl that he worked with at Jimmy John's. And she was young. She was like 17 or 18. And obviously by this time we were mid-20s, 24, 25. He would bring up this girl randomly and he would talk about like how annoying this girl was. I didn't think that much of it at the time. But yeah, there was a lot of, oh, this girl's so annoying. I can't stand her and blah, 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 blah. And then I would see that he'd be getting a text from her and he would say, oh my God, this girl's texting me to make me take her shift again. And she's so annoying, yada, yada, yada. And I felt it again, somewhere in me knew something was up, right? But so one night he was working at the movie theater and I went in there and like brought him dinner or something like that. And I was like, hey, you know, I know you're closing tonight, so you're going to get off a little bit later, but would you want to hang out afterward? And he said, no. He said, oh, I'm really tired and I don't really want to hang out tonight, but I'll see you, you know, tomorrow. And I said, okay, great. You know, I love you. I love you too. That was it. I left. And I went to go hang out with another one of my friends. Well, spent some time at that friend's house. And then it was getting late. It was probably, you know, midnight at that point. So I start heading home. And on my way home, I stop at his apartment complex to see if he's there because I just had a feeling that he wasn't, right? And so I pull into the parking lot and I see that his car is not there. So I sit in the parking lot and I text him and I say, hey, are you home? And he's not responding to me. And I call him a couple of times and I'm texting him. And again, I am behaving like somebody that I don't want to be, but I am calling, I'm texting repeatedly. Where are you? I'm sitting in your apartment complex right now and you're not here. I thought you said you were coming home after work. What's going on? Whatever. So then finally, after, I don't know, maybe about a half hour or so, I see his car pull into the parking lot. He pulls into the parking lot and he goes like the long way around the parking lot. So instead of coming like and parking right next to me, he parks further down in the parking lot. I'm like, what's going on? Kind of a thing. He gets out of the car and I get out of my car and he's walking, you know, walking quickly towards me and I'm immediately crying. And I'm just like, I know something is wrong. Please tell me what's going on. If you don't want to be with me anymore, you have to just tell me. And he's like, you're being ridiculous. I don't understand like what you're doing here. Like I literally got off work and then I just drove around and smoked in my car. Literally nothing's going on. And I'm just begging him. I'm begging him, begging him. Please just break it off with me. I can't do this anymore. I know that you're cheating on me. I know something's going on. I feel it. He was like, I know that we've been through a lot, but you have to learn to trust me. And He was like, I love you. We'll go out on a date tomorrow. We'll go see a movie. We'll go to dinner. Please just go home. Like, I'll see you tomorrow. And I was like, okay, he loves me. We're good, right? I get into my car and I pull out of his parking lot and I get like not even 10 seconds out of his parking lot. And I think, no, screw this. Something's going on. And I turn around and I go back into his parking lot and I pull up in front of his car. Like I see where he's parked and I park right in front of him. I pull up and my headlights hit him and a girl in the car together. And I'm like, I knew it, right? I'm absolutely hysterical. I get out of the car. I open her door. And I knew her name because he had brought her up so many times. And it was all coming together now to me who she was. I opened the car door and I said, let me guess, you're so-and-so. And she just is looking at me like wide-eyed, right? This poor girl. I said to her, you need to call somebody to come pick you up. He's out of the car. I couldn't even tell you what he was saying. I was just so in a haze and furious and crying and sad and just like, how could you do this to me? Why couldn't you have just left me alone 4.5 years ago when we did this the first time? And I was like, I don't understand why you're doing this because I love you and I thought that you loved me. And he's crying and is like, it's just not working, blah, 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 blah. Like all of this, such drama. I think I slapped him, which is absolutely horrible. I was, again, heartbroken. And I didn't think that I could be more heartbroken than the last time or the last time or the last time before that. And I was devastated. And that was the final time. It is crazy to me that, again, that it could have just stopped after that first breakup. I was kind of back to square one emotionally. I had my coping mechanisms that I had 5 years to gather and to work on. And so I did that because I was waiting tables at the time. It was very much the culture of that time where it's like, oh, you'd be done with work. And then everyone's going out to the bar, right? I was out more. I was drinking. Not that that's the healthiest, you know, coping mechanism by any means, but you know, I was out and I was out with friends and drinking and having a good time and meeting guys and talking to people. I wasn't necessarily afraid to date. I would say almost the opposite. I was almost kind of like, God, get me another boyfriend so I can shove it in this guy's face kind of a thing. That actually was the problem because the next relationship that I got into after our relationship ended, it wasn't long. It was less than a year. I met somebody else and I started dating this person and once again leapt into it headfirst, no hesitation, no nothing. And then he ended up cheating on me. And again, I was devastated. And worse than that, we actually stayed together after I found out that he was cheating. We tried to work it out, which was an even bigger mistake that really set me back as far as my confidence because I just felt like, who am I that I've gotten cheated on now twice back to back in my two most serious relationships? There's something wrong with me. I am not pretty enough. I am not smart enough. I am not fun enough. I'm not thin enough. Overcoming it was so hard. And it took me a very, very long time to build my confidence back up to say, like, this is not about me. This is about them. And that's not to say that I didn't have to do the work because I did have to step back and think to myself, well, I brought something into these relationships. So all I could focus on was myself and figuring out what I needed to do in order to have healthier relationships. Once I got cheated on back to back, I was like twofold. Half of me was like, I have to trust my gut instinct with everything I have because it told me both times when something was really wrong and I was being taken advantage of. There would be times where it was like, I know nothing's going on. There's nothing in my gut is even telling me that there's something going on. But what if my gut is wrong this time? Because I've always gotten cheated on. So I'm going to get cheated on again. That's going to happen. You start second guessing your gut. You start second guessing your lack of gut instinct. It's like you're thinking about it all the time. I really thought, you're never going to meet a guy that doesn't kind of want to be with somebody else. I really thought that. And I will say that's the number one thing that I tell people about my husband now. And we met on Tinder. It was like immediately we started talking. We had texted or messaged, you know, back and forth for a while. And then we moved to like texting. And at one point he said, I just want to let you know, I've deleted my Tinder. I don't want to talk to anybody but you. If you're not there, I totally get that. I'm not telling you this so that you'll also delete your Tinder. I just want you to know, right? I just want to be upfront and honest. And I was like, what the heck? Like, what is this? Like, I've never met anybody like this. I've never talked to anybody who's like, hey, no games, right? And that's something that I would tell any young person. I mean, anybody really that's struggling in relationships that kind of feel like almost like this cat and mouse thing. If it starts to feel like a game, walk away from it, because love is not supposed to be a game, right? Like in a game, there are winners and there are losers. One of you's got to lose if you're playing a game. And if you're in an honest and healthy and open and good relationship, it won't be that way. You won't be questioning, how do I play hard to get? How do I get this person to like me more? That's a game. I have not had one day with my husband in our 7 years of being together where I have felt that way of like, oh, this is a game and I'm going to take a step in the wrong direction and I'm going to lose. And I did not think that that was possible at that time. I thought that there would always be a level of gameplay in a relationship because of the relationships I'd had and the back and forth that I'd had. And so it took me a while. It took me a while to be like, okay, this is what normal is. This is normal and healthy and good, open communication, loving relationship.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
When I spoke with Lauren, I asked her how crucial her mother's role was in helping her through the emotional turmoil she faced with her partner.
I get emotional when I think about my mom because I'm the youngest in my family. I'm the only girl. And I just can't imagine what it would be like to have to see your daughter go through that and to be like, oh my God, there's so much more of the world. There's so much more of love and relationships that you're going to get to experience. And it's like, as my mother, you know, speaking to her 21-year-old who thinks that she knows everything, like, how do I tell you it feels like you're in hell right now, but this will go away? My mom is a very emotional person. My mom is a very sympathetic person. And every time I cried, my mom cried. Every time. That is the part of it that I almost feel bad for. As I went through this 5 years with this person, I was not me anymore. I was not a good daughter. I was not a good friend. I spent a lot of time with friends who probably didn't want to be around me, which I totally get, and family that didn't want to be around me, which I totally get. I had such a great support system, people that made me eat. Like I had friends who, it's going to make me cry. I had friends that would like come over and make sure I was eating and like watch shows with me. And like, it's crazy. It's like the support that you have, even though those are those same people that you're yelling at and saying like, I love him and he loves me and screw you if you guys don't get it. You know what I mean? It's like those same exact people are the people that are sitting with you and being like, hey, you're going to get over this and screw him. And I think I put my friends through a lot at that time. I definitely put my family through a lot at that time. My eldest brother at that time was really, really fantastic. He'd pick me up. He would take me places. He ended up being a therapist. He would say like, do you need to go see somebody? He would help me with that kind of thing. And my parents, my dad's a little bit more stoic. So his help was always kind of like a little hug and everything's going to be fine. But my mom, my aunt, who's my mom's sister, they spent so much time with me. I remember after the last breakup, I was like in my bed, sobbing and crying. And my mom was like, what do you need? I said, call my Aunt Margot. I want my Aunt Margot here. And my mom called her and my Aunt Margot came right over. I mean, it was just incredible, the love and support from everybody else.
I also asked her to explain how she behaved in ways during the relationship that she felt didn't align with her true character.
I have a lot of shame around, again, my behavior at the time. And this is a term that gets, you know, I feel like it's a sexist thing. It's so rooted in the misogyny that's built into our world. But it's like a woman acting crazy, a girl acting crazy, right? Like that's a thing. It's like women aren't jealous or women aren't acting out of instinct. Women aren't reacting to something that their partner has done. They're just being crazy, right? And so even though I hate the sentiment of it, I really do. I know that his sister or some of our friends or some of his friends, or especially the way that he probably presented a lot of it to the people that he knew, they probably were like, well, Lauren's acting crazy. She's acting like a crazy person. She's texting you all the time. She's calling you all the time. She's driving past your house. I mean, those are things that, yeah, I can't sit here and say that I think that that's a totally normal thing to do. Now, again, do I think I was acting out of things? I was reacting to things that he was doing. Yes, but I hate that. I mean, I really do. I have a lot of shame around the fact that that's not who I am. Most people that know me, I guarantee you, would be like, Lauren would rather eat glass than sit around and let someone disrespect her, because that is, it's not who I am. But back then it was. Back then it was who I was. I didn't know any better. And yeah, there is shame. And oh, I wonder what other people think of me because I did these things. Even now, there are bound to be a handful of people in the world who just think I'm crazy because of something that happened when I was 22 years old. Again, it was like one of those things where it's like, I knew it before I knew it. I felt it before I saw anything. There were just so many things that early in our relationship, it never mattered if he left his phone in a room with me. And then as we progressed and broke up and got back together, all of a sudden he took his phone with him everywhere he went. And so it was like, I always knew there was something. And then this was just kind of like the proof, right? That's not excusing their behavior or excusing the fact that they cheated. But I have to examine, A, what it is I'm willing to deal with and put up with and what I'm not, and stand hard on my own boundaries. But I also have to be able to think to myself, like, what did I allow? What did I bring? What did I, you know, I became someone I didn't recognize either. And so I had to kind of take a little bit of responsibility for the role I played in those relationships. And that was hard, but that's the work I'm glad I did, because I could have sat around forever waiting for both of these guys to apologize. I could be 35 here right now thinking, I didn't do anything wrong. Why have I not gotten a long apology letter on Facebook Messenger from these two guys who broke my heart? That's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. Closure is a myth. Closure is a myth. Closure from the person that broke up with you is a myth. All of those separate heartaches are a blur to me because I felt like I reacted the same every time. I wish that I could sit here and say, every time he broke up with me, I became a little bit more numb, or I mourned the loss of the relationship less every time, but I didn't. I mean, it felt like the first time every single time.
Finally, I asked her how she's worked to heal and come to terms with the mental and emotional impact of her past relationships.
I had to figure it out. There was so much of it that there was nothing anyone could do. I had to figure out why I was so attached and what that meant. And that took a lot of work on my part, for sure. I did not think about how much this affected me mentally and emotionally until I was so far outside of it. I knew the pain that I felt in the moment, but I had no clue of like picking a fight with my husband early on and being like, why am I doing this? Why are we arguing about this? Why am I telling him he needs to give me his phone when I know that I have nothing to worry? You know what I mean? It's like stuff like that where you're like, oh, wait a minute, that's learned behavior from another relationship. I just think too that maintaining a certain level of self-esteem, especially and confidence as a female in the world that we live in, is hard. It's hard enough as it is.
For much of her life, Lauren believed she would never be enough for any man, convinced every relationship would end in betrayal. Trapped by her insecurities, she often displayed her flaws, reinforcing the negative narrative she had created about herself. Caught in toxic relationships, she became someone she never intended to be. But with the support of her friends and family, especially her mother, Lauren found a way to break free. Through this process, she realized the importance of setting boundaries and recognizing unhealthy relationships. She acknowledges the shame she feels for her role in these toxic patterns, but now understands how they eroded her self-esteem and made her lose trust in her instincts. Lauren's story challenges idealized notions of love seen in movies, offering a more realistic view that true relationships require open communication, honesty, and mutual respect. Ultimately, she believes closure is a myth. True closure, she now knows, comes from within. Until next time, I'm Jake Deptula, and this is Love, Lust, Fear. Every guest featured on Love, Lust, Fear selects a charity or organization to share. Please check the show notes on this episode for more details. If you or someone you know is being abused by a partner, there is help available. The National Domestic Violence Hotline provides essential tools and support to help survivors of domestic violence. Just call 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Or you can text START to 88788. If you'd like to be a guest on Love, Lust, Fear and share your personal dating or relationship story, you can email us at lovelustfearpod@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram at lovelustfearpod. Disclaimer, the information shared on this podcast should not be considered as professional advice or a substitute for seeking professional advice.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.